We are joined in studio by lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, because I know that we forgot how much fun it is to get up on the day after Christmas and work when you might not have to. So we appreciate you coming in. I was just about to start talking about the other thing that happened on the day of impeachment, which was the Federal Court of Appeals ruling on Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who are not familiar with it, you know, some people are saying that impeachment is the worst thing to happen to, you know, D.C., certainly since Clinton, maybe ever. But it might not have been the worst thing to happen to the Republicans and Democrats that day.
No.
Because what I'm talking about is there was a decision by the Federal Court of Appeals to strike down Obamacare's individual mandate provision, meaning that healthcare coverage is more likely to become a major marquee issue in 2020. So now, if you're the Democrats, and you know the individual mandate is up for grabs, you're pounding doors, before the 2020 election, and they say, people, okay, what have you done for healthcare? Now you've done nothing. Republicans did nothing before you. Republicans are trying to repeal and replace. They didn't even repeal. And now the Democrats, other than, a little bit of prescription drug reform that's going to go to the Senate and die, they haven't done anything on it either. So I think all of a sudden, both parties are going to find themselves with pretty slim resumes going into the election, and Republicans will be able to say, well, they spend all their time impeaching the president.
Right.
And they're going to say, yeah, we spent all our time impeaching the president.
I think you're approaching this, though, Brian, the way that a regular person would approach this and think of it as, all right, what are you going to do? You have a plan. What are you going to do for me, right, as a voter? Unfortunately, this is going to happen the same way every debate happens in Washington. It's going to have nothing to do with what's been done, because Democrats haven't done anything since Obamacare to fix it. Republicans haven't done anything to get rid of it or to make it better. But they're going to spend all their time saying that, well, Democrats will say, well, we haven't done anything because Republicans want to do this terrible thing over here. And Republicans turn around and follow suit. Well, Democrats, if we gave them power, would do this terrible thing over here. They're going to spend their time scaring the pants off of people about what the other side is going to do rather than take any kind of a constructive step forward themselves. And they simply won't do it. Nobody will talk about a solution. They'll just talk about how bad the other side is and what their plan would be.
So, Jeff, is this one step towards lower courts just invalidating Obamacare altogether?
It could be. This is the Fifth Circuit took up, if you recall, the original opinion that Chief Justice Roberts wrote years ago, where he found that Obamacare was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause, but that went under this alternative argument under the Tax and Spend Clause of the Constitution. And they relied on the tax penalty that you'd have to pay if you didn't have health insurance. And so what the Fifth Circuit took, this was an appeal from a federal district court judge in New Orleans, and the Fifth Circuit took up the question of, is the individual mandate now unconstitutional in light of the fact that Congress repealed the tax penalty, which kind of defanged Obamacare in the first place. They took away the penalty for not having health insurance. And so now, but they've remanded it back to the district court judge. My understanding is that, he was ready to toss the entire law out. They've remanded the case back to the district court judge for further proceedings as to whether or not there's any portion of Obamacare that survives in light of their holding on the tax penalty. I think we kind of know where it's going, because he's already willing to throw the whole thing out. Yeah. So it's very likely that this is going to end up back in the hands of the Supreme Court, as these issues often do. You know, we don't have one definitive ruling and then move on. There's, one case, and then there's, six other cases about nuances or something changes in the law. So we're going to have ultimately go back to the U.S. Supreme Court with the decision as to, does Obamacare survive without the tax penalty? And this, to your point you made earlier on the show, you know, this is again the legislative branch punting to the judicial branch. I mean, and this was part of, I think, why the Chief Justice originally ruled the way he did, was almost trying to force them to, you know, to make their own changes, or to force the voters to make a change if they didn't like the law. I always say the hallmark of Chief Justice Roberts' court is trying to keep it out of the political fray, and he does anything, some interesting legal gymnastics to try to keep it out of the partisan fray.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. We're engaging this convoluted district court to Supreme Court and back to appeals court, and this, I mean, the Commerce Clause, that was, and speaking of history lessons for your students, nobody was talking about the Commerce Clause before Obamacare came back up, right? But this is exactly, as you say, a problem with the, I mean, the literal balance of powers in our government is that the Congress is so incapable of actually addressing a problem where, even whether you agree or disagree with the big direction that Obamacare took us, there are big problems with the way it was structured. Funny what happens when you cram things through in the dead of the night on a completely partisan process, but don't get me started there. But now you've done nothing.
Wait,
for
when does that ever happen?
I think it just happened again with this budget, but we'll get to that. Then you've now gone a decade under, or close to now, a decade of Obamacare, and yet nobody's fixing anything. Because again, you don't want to fix anything. You want to blame the other side for screwing it up in the first place, or blame the other side for what they're going to do to fix it. And so we're stuck in this point where people are being hurt by Obamacare. They have a recourse in the courts, and yet courts don't want to, nor should they, decide what are blatantly political questions.
Even AOC, probably last week now, AOC was complaining because
first world problems.
Yeah, Congress people, you know, have to buy their insurance through Obamacare, and she was complaining about how difficult it was, that there were 66 plans that she had to maneuver, and how, I think she said, nobody should have to go through this.
She just didn't have time to figure out her health care because she was too busy reading all 2,400 pages of a $1.4 trillion spending bill, and she only had 24 hours to do that, so she was a little preoccupied with that heavy reading.
She's a fast reader.
She's not a big fan of consumer choice. You know?
No.
You can see where she's going. Her solution is going to be, why don't we just have the government tell you what kind of health insurance you should have?
That'd be way easier, way simpler.
Much simpler.
Well, she did say that that, you know, she's supporting Bernie, and she this week said it would be a great honor to be considered for vice president.
Okay, but
my eyes are going to fall out of my head with all the eye rolling there.
All right, so you bring up Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
You're talking about Obamacare.
Yeah.
Where he's talking about, and AOC is talking about, Medicare for All. Here's the other piece of Obamacare that hasn't been talked about too much. In this budget deal, you finally had Democrats give up on this Cadillac tax on insurance plans.
Yep.
They finally gave up on the ongoing tax on medical devices.
Yep.
You've invalidated now, or Congress already gave up on, the tax penalty under Obamacare.
Yep.
So we had this massive new government intrusion into healthcare, massive expansion of Medicaid programs, and the amount of spending that we have on federal healthcare. And now we don't have any way to pay for it. That's Obamacare. Now fast forward to Medicare for All, which would cost exponentially more. How can we ever trust Congress to actually pay for this huge bill if they can't even find a way to pay for Obamacare, which was already passed? This is a classic Congress is going to give you stuff and then not take the responsibility or have the balls to go out and actually find a way to pay for it.
Well, and I don't know, Jeff, if you heard this on your drive-in, but I referred to Nancy Pelosi as the Mitch Trubisky of the...
I did hear that.
Yeah, anyway, so copyright Brian McDaniel on that one. But it seems like while they are half sort of kind of a little bit mostly impeaching the president and you know, standing firm, not giving him his wall, they seem to be giving the president almost everything else he wants, which I think is pretty, you know, people don't, no one's paying attention, and if they're paying attention, they're just hearing the, you know, these big loud DC shouting matches. But, you know, slowly but surely, step by step, President Trump is getting a lot of, you know, things that are on the Republican agenda actually done.
Yeah, that's the surreal part about the impeachment stuff, is at the same time they're passing his, they're approving his U.S. Mexico Canada agreement. You know, he's got some sort of a phase one of a China deal is heading towards the hill. They keep giving him things to campaign on for reelection, but claiming that, you know, this is some, there's some urgent imperative to remove him from office, which they still haven't sent the articles.
No, they haven't sent the articles.
I don't know where the urgency, that doesn't seem to bespeak urgency when they don't, formally start the, he's not really technically impeached, I understand, until they transmit the articles to the Senate. They voted on it to impeach him. They haven't actually, until you send it to the Senate, it's just a vote.
Well, and what's, increasingly obvious, in fact, we talked earlier about how Mitch McConnell said the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud as far as working with the president, when the articles do get eventually sent over, if they do. Same thing with the Democrats, and I'm not remembering, which Democrat House chair it was, but he said we can't trust that we're going to be able to beat Trump in 2020, so we have to impeach him. That's just showing that more and more they're looking at the electoral maps and kind of seeing a little bit what Trump is seeing, is that Trump has a very strong case for reelection.
Yeah, I think it was Gerald Nadler that said that. Yeah, being a St. Thomas alum, and I've had my battles with, we got my school's getting kicked out of the MIAC in large part because of a big victory we had over St. Olaf in football a few years ago. It's kind of like the St. Olaf strategy or the MIAC strategy. They can't beat them, so let's kick them out.
Yeah. Well, and it, which would be, certainly not constitutionally a good thing to do, but if they had control of the Senate, this would be a smart way to do it if you don't think you can beat them.
But here's the constitutional question that rises up for me. Say Nancy Pelosi does send the articles over, and somehow the Senate does vote to convict. They actually impeach the president. They remove him from office. And yet, given the way it's happened, given how partisan it is, given the president's popularity in some of those key battleground states, if you have been impeached and yet you still get on the ballot, because he certainly has a pathway to getting on the ballot at this point, even if he's impeached, or if he's on the ballot and then he's impeached early next year, can you be reelected? And what do you do then where the will of the people is to elect this person that a congressional process got rid of? That's constitutional crisis land right there. Or am I missing something that says that can't happen?
No, you're saying if he was actually removed, but he was
still on the ballot.
You're going to have a lot of lawsuits in various states as to whether or not they can, the party can add a different candidate or different nominee on the ballot. I think the difficult thing about this, and I think in hindsight, when you look back, I think if you asked a lot of Republicans that were there when they impeached Bill Clinton, I think in hindsight, they might privately express some regret for the Pandora's box that they opened.
Yeah. Yep.
And this one is just going to open up the box even further. Anytime you have the House of one party and the president of another, you've lowered the bar so low as to what the standard is for impeachment, basically partisan disagreement.
Yep.
Or a disagreement over somebody's personality, that immediately it's now going to be, we need to impeach.
I am Brian McDaniel. I am joined by Jason Flores, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, Brianne in the booth. You are listening to the Justice and Drew Show on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, FM 103.5. You can always catch us on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on the iHeartRadio app.